What is up and welcome into the Locked On Chargers podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Wade, joined as always by my co-host, David Drogemeyer. We're two writers who got our start at San Diego Sports Domination, San Diego's top sports blog, and we started covering the Chargers 4 seasons ago, doing our own Facebook Live show, Chargers Domination Live. And this is our second season with the Locked On Chargers podcast, bringing you your team every day. What is up, guys? It is Wednesday, so you know what that means. It's a crossover Wednesday, and although the Raiders are one of my least favorite teams, your boy Q is probably my favorite other Locked On podcast host. So David Drogemeyer is going to meet up in Texas with your boy Q in studio to record today's crossover episode, talking about this week's matchup between the Chargers and the Raiders. So you guys are definitely going to want to stick around for that. But first, we're going to be talking about the news that a former Chargers quarterback is setting even more NFL passing records, with Drew Brees absolutely going insane on Monday Night Football once again. And we can take a look at what if Drew Brees would have stayed with the Chargers and what that might have looked like, because obviously with a quarterback like him and now having Philip Rivers, who's good in his own right, many fans have wondered, you know, what if the Chargers had hung on to Brees instead of Philip Rivers. So that being said, let's go ahead and get into it, guys. This is your Locked On Chargers lead story. I'm Daniel Wade, joined by David Drogemeyer. The news of the day is that Drew Brees on Monday Night Football set multiple NFL records once again in a primetime game. On Monday night, Drew Brees made history throwing 4 touchdown passes to move past Tom Brady and Peyton Manning for number one all-time in passing touchdowns with 541. Brees also made history for a single game performance as well on Monday night, completing 29 of his 30 passes. That 96.7 completion percentage passes Philip Rivers' 96.55 that he set last year against the Cardinals. As if he didn't have enough records, Drew Brees gets another one and takes it from Philip Rivers. So when you're talking about a quarterback who now is the all-time leading passer and not just passing touchdowns, but a bunch of other statistics as well. He's the all-time passing yard leader. He has the most 4,000, 5,000 passing yard seasons, most 30-plus touchdown passing seasons, just to name a few. I mean, you could go on forever with the amount of stats that Drew Brees has put up. But David, to see a former Chargers quarterback who started his first 5 years in San Diego go on to do these amazing things and just to be considered one of, if not the greatest quarterbacks of all time, it is just amazing to see what his career has turned into.
Especially for a quarterback coming out of Purdue who is just a little over 6 foot tall, in an era where quarterbacks were all towering giants, you know, guys that are 6'4", 6'5", normally, you know, that's what teams were looking for, that prototypical size and height, and Drew Brees did not have either one of those. But did that stop him? Absolutely not. You look in the record books and you see Drew Brees smattered all over those records, every passing record you could imagine. Drew Brees' name is among the elite quarterbacks in NFL history. 541 touchdown passes, absolutely incredible. Drew Brees will be enshrined in Canton, Ohio, of course, when he decides to hang it up. What an absolutely incredible career.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and you're right. Any NFL passing record that you look up, if he's not the leader, he's close, because not only has he, you know, put up gaudy numbers as far as passing yards. I mean, he's led the NFL 7 times in passing yards for the season. He's had 4 5,000 plus yard seasons for a guy who was a second round pick, the second quarterback taken in the 2001 draft. The number one quarterback was Michael Vick, who was thought to be a transcendent talent. Drew Brees has had the much better career. But of course, when he was a Chargers quarterback, it's going to leave many fans saying, what if the Chargers decided to hold on to Drew Brees and maybe move on from Philip Rivers or trade Philip Rivers? And really, right now, obviously, it seems like the Chargers should have done that, but that was not the case when these two teams separated. Drew Brees' record as a starting quarterback for the Chargers was 30-28. He had 80 touchdowns and 53 interceptions. And while the touchdown ratio is pretty good, the record is okay. It wasn't as if the Chargers were thinking they had a transcendent type quarterback. He was just a pretty good quarterback at that point. Since he's left, he's 131-83 as the New Orleans starter. He's won a Super Bowl, led the league in passing 7 times. And this season after he left the Chargers, of course, the next year, he leads the league in passing yards, kind of showing them up. But David, his last game as a Charger ended with him leaving the field, holding his arm out like a chicken wing. And you really just had no idea what was going to happen with him. He dislocated his shoulder. He didn't have the best arm strength already, and some people thought that he would never get back to the arm strength that he had before the injury. And of course, what does he do? He comes back. His arm is stronger than it ever was before that, and he goes on to have his Hall of Fame career. But David, of course, when you're looking at what this guy has done, Charger fans are going to say, what if?
Well, yeah, I mean, how could you not? I mean, hindsight is always 20/20, obviously. You see all of the accolades that he's accumulated over his Hall of Fame career, and you can't help but think, hey, what would he have done if he was with the Chargers for all of those years instead of Phillip Rivers? But I don't know if that he would have the same success. I think his head coach over there, Sean Payton, with the New Orleans Saints, has always been renowned as one of the best offensive minds in NFL history. I mean, he's always been very creative, very, very sought after by many teams that would even try to trade for him. So I think he's another part of the equation with Drew Brees. I think those two guys, their paths are intertwined. I think they helped each other get to where they are. And I don't know if there'd be the same Drew Brees without Sean Payton and vice versa. So as great as the thought would be to see Drew Brees do all the things that he did in a Saints uniform and a Chargers uniform, I don't think that it would actually play out like that.
I mean, some fans are even crazy enough to think if Drew Brees was the quarterback, the Chargers would still be in San Diego. I mean, that's how highly people think of Drew Brees. And not to take anything away from Drew Brees, who has had a magnificent career, but yes, Sean Payton obviously helps, and you're right. Sean Payton wouldn't be the Sean Payton we know if he didn't have Drew Brees. And Drew Brees being able to be in that system that accentuates all of the things that he does well, especially, I mean, throwing a lot of short passes with incredible accuracy. Those two guys were made for each other. But for Drew Brees, you know, to battle past the stigma of being a short quarterback before, you know, we had all the Baker Mayfields and Russell Wilsons of the world. I mean, now Kyler Murray is in that conversation as well. He was the guy, and he is still the guy. He's still doing it. His career might go longer than Phillip Rivers at this point. To see what Drew Brees has done, we just have to congratulate him on what an incredible career. And it is nice for Charger fans to know that all of these records that he's gaining, he did some of that as a San Diego Chargers quarterback. Him and Phillip Rivers are still very good friends. He still lives in San Diego and has a house here. So he will always be intertwined with the Chargers. So we wish him nothing but the best. And I'm so excited to see what he's been able to do, becoming one of the best quarterbacks in NFL history. But we do have 2 more segments to get into. It is Crossover Wednesday, so David is going to cut it up with your boy Q, one of my favorite Locked On co-hosts. So we're going to get into that right after this. But first, this episode is brought to you guys by Blue Chew. You guys can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in the bedroom if you listen up. BlueChew.com, that's blue, like the color blue. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever the opportunity arises. If you could benefit from more confidence where it counts, Blue Chew is a fast and easy way to enhance your performance. The best part about Blue Chew, guys, is there's no more awkwardness. It's prescribed online by licensed physicians, so you don't have to go to the doctor's office or wait in line at the pharmacy. And it ships straight to your door in a discreet package. Right now, we have a special deal for our listeners. If you guys go to BlueChew.com, you can get your first shipment for free when you use the special promo code LOCKEDON. All you have to do is pay $5 in shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON to try it for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring this podcast. Also, guys, getting all excited about Blue Chew gets me excited about our favorite car dealership over here at Locked On Chargers. And of course, I'm talking, as always, about Metro Infinity, which you can find right off the 210 in Monrovia. You have to swing by their brand new multi-million-dollar facility and check out the amazing selection of new and used cars. They're the only dealer in California that is family-owned, and they've been in business for over 25 years. One of my favorite parts about Metro Infinity is that if you don't like going into the dealership, it's no problem at all. They will take your new car and the paperwork to your home or office, and you can complete that whole transaction there without ever having to step foot in the dealership. They take pride in not being your typical car dealer where it takes hours to buy a car. They don't play games, and they want their customers to have a luxury car buying experience, and they're even going to help you out with the cost as well, because if you mention that Locked On Chargers sent you over there, you will get an extra $500 off any car purchase. If you're thinking about a new Infiniti or even in the market for any new car, please give them a chance to earn your business. You can reach them at 626-599-7510 or at metroinfinity.com. You guys have to check it out. You know there's a loved one that we would love to put a giant bow on a new car for Christmas, and the best place to do that is at Metro Infinity.
All right, what's going on, everybody? It's Crossover Wednesday. You know it's here. David Drogemeyer, Locked On Chargers, and I'm joined in studio with your boy Q of Locked On Raiders. What's going on, your boy Q?
Man, I'm having a good time, I love the fact that we can come in studio and do it again, and I said it last time. I think it was the first in the history of the crossover editions of the Locked On Podcast Network, and now I think it's the second. I think it's the second time. It's really cool that you're able to come up to the radio station. We're able to jump in here, and the audio sounds great, and it's fun. It's nice energy, and a lot of people I really appreciated it the last time we were able to get together like this. So I'm looking forward to today's episode.
Oh, man, it's such a rare opportunity to be able to do this in studio with you. I appreciate you opening up the studio to me. And, hey, small world, but, of course, people are here for the football, so let's get to it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So, I mean, the Raiders started off really hot. I mean, the 6-4 record, and they're feeling good about themselves. They're like, hey, maybe it's our time right now. But things have definitely changed in the last four games. The Raiders have been on a four-game losing streak. So what do you think is the biggest difference between that 6-4 start and the Raiders we see right now?
You know, that's a really good question. I mean, I wish I had the answer because I could probably send it over to John Gruden and company and tell him, hey, this is how you stop the bleeding. But it's really tough, man. It is. And a lot of people and fans included were excited about that 6-4 start. And we're talking about the P word. Oh, yeah, they're going to go to the postseason. There's a good chance to make the playoffs. Final season in Oakland. Yeah, let's go do that. And I just kind of said, like, hey, man, it's 10 weeks. You know, you got to kind of see how the next few weeks shake out. And the NFL is a strange beast, man. And so all of a sudden, the tide has changed. And the Raiders are now on that four-game losing streak, like you mentioned. And their offense really hasn't been clicking. I mean, even on Sunday against the Jaguars, you scored 16 points in the first half. Nothing. You get blanked in the second half. And, you know, in the NFL, man, you can't do that. You got to consistently score points. Your defense has to be able to complement you. But just the offense is not really clicking. It's just not. And Josh Jacobs, bless his heart, he's doing his thing. He's out there fighting and clawing and working as hard as he can. He missed one game because of that shoulder injury. But besides that, I mean, he's got, you know, wide receivers. Carr's got wide receivers that are dropping balls. Not really the best guys in the world. And look, you're familiar with Tyrell Williams, so you probably are not shocked that he's dropping some passes and not looking like $1 million or even the money that he was assigned to be the guy. And he wasn't assigned to be the number one guy, but with AB being gone, now he is the number one dude. So, you know, he really hasn't lived up to that. But it's just the offense isn't clicking. It's just off. And it's really disappointing to see because, again, like you said, man, they got off to a nice promising start, and it looked like this team was moving in the right direction, and now you're kind of wondering, is this team moving in the right direction?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a question you have to ask, and I mean, when we talk about that question, you got to talk about the guy who's at the helm. Yep. That's the quarterback. We're talking about Derek Carr here, of course. So how do you think they're going to handle the Derek Carr situation? How do you think that's going to play out? Is his days numbered as the starting quarterback of the Raiders?
I think everybody knows who Derek Carr is. You know what I mean? I think everyone knows exactly who he is, what he can be, basically what his ceiling is, and where he's going to take this team or what he can do to take this team as far as he can. I, myself, have proposed that the Raiders go and draft a guy in the draft and let Derek Carr still be the guy. You know, let him be the starting quarterback, but have a young dude behind him pushing him. Also have a young dude behind him that you can start grooming, you know, a guy that you can start really teaching the ropes to and be ready to take over. Because again, I mean, I think we kind of really know who Carr is, and he's a lightning bolt. And I don't say that because I'm talking to you and you're host of the Chargers, but he is a lightning bolt or a lightning rod for conversation. When you bring up Derek Carr, it's like you love him or you hate him. You know what I mean? There's like no middle even. It's like the fan base is so torn on who Derek Carr is. I mean, he got booed off the field on Sunday, which was a shame, but it happened. And it's like, oh, he's the greatest thing since Rich Gannon. Well, there wasn't a lot of good in between Rich Gannon and him. You know what I mean? So there's so many different arguments to have about Derek Carr. I like him, and I think that he's a good quarterback. I don't think he's a great quarterback. I don't think he'll ever be elite. He just, I mean, after 6 years, you kind of know who a guy is. You know what I mean? Like, he's going to be who he's going to be. I personally think that the Raiders should go into the draft, go and get Jalen Hurts out of Oklahoma, let him sit behind Derek Carr for a year, maybe even two if you have to, and let that new kind of wave of dynamic quarterback, that guy that can keep plays alive when, well, the play's just not there, guys that can improvise on the run or do some stuff on the run, you know, on the fly. Derek Carr's just not that guy, and so I think that that's what they need to do, but you're asking me a question that I don't think anybody has the right answer on. What's going to happen with Derek Carr? I do expect him to be the quarterback in Vegas next year, but after that, I mean, the jury's still out.
Well, from one team that has some quarterback issues, I'm sure we'll get into that
right
when we flip it over. But we were talking a little bit beforehand, before we started recording. You were actually at that game in Oakland, the very last game they're going to play in Oakland. Wow, how was that? How was that experience?
The experience was awesome. We had a big, huge tailgate party for the Locked On Raider podcast folks, and it was like 150, 160 people there. I mean, it was
wow.
Yeah, it was absolutely bananas. It was amazing. I got to thank them so much for really putting on and showing out for Oakland and sending off the Raiders the right way. The fans did their job. The fans did their job on the send-off. The Raiders didn't finish their job. They didn't complete their end of the bargain, but the fans did a hell of a job. At the end, it got ugly when people started throwing stuff on the field, and I can't say that I agree with that stuff. But besides that, man, just being there in that atmosphere with the energy of the crowd, I mean, it was just like your heart was pumping. You were excited. Everybody's fired up. I had a hell of a time, and I know everyone that listens to the Locked On Raiders podcast that was there in attendance had a hell of a time as well. So, yeah, that was something special. Matter of fact, I'm not going to lie to you, I still ain't even been to sleep yet. You know, I left Oakland on a Monday evening, and I still haven't been to sleep yet. And that's okay. That's okay. I mean, that's just how things go. For that experience, I'll stay up another 24 hours if I have to.
Well, hey, you were a part of history, man. I mean, No matter if you like that history or not, it is history. So last time we got together, we talked a little bit about that really big draft class that the Raiders had, and we kind of asked you to give me a little bit of a snapshot of how they were doing up to that point. Now we have a more comprehensive view of the season, as we only got two games left. So how do you evaluate that draft class now?
I think it's a really good one. I really do. I thought it was really good back in week 10 when we talked, but I really think it's a really, really good one. Max Crosby has really shown out, and hell, he showed out in a major way in that game against the Chargers. Matter of fact, that was the last game that the Raiders won.
I know.
I mean, think about that. That was the last game that they won, was the last time that we talked. And maybe you'll bring the Raiders good luck again this week. Who knows? But Max Crosby's been a heck of an addition, man. And he was a fourth-round draft pick, so that was great. Josh Jacobs, over 1,000 yards on the season. First Raider running back rookie in the history of the team to do that. That's amazing. Cleve Ferrell, I think, is starting to come around the last few weeks. He's really starting to look good. And really, the reason he's starting to look good, in my opinion, Deion Jordan was picked up off of waivers after he was released and came back from suspension. And he's been able to play in the middle of that defensive line, and it's freed up Cleve Ferrell to be able to play his more natural position. So I think he's going to start to come around in a better way as well. Trayvon Mullen still has bumps and bruises here and there, but he's a rookie playing defensive back. You know, he's out there on the island. He has good moments. He has bad moments, but I still like what he brings to the table. And there's some good dudes. You know, we haven't seen too much of Isaiah Johnson, the fourth-round defensive back. He's supposed to be a good guy. John Gruden has really hyped him up, but we haven't really got to see him. Us fans have not got to see him too much yet. And Hunter Renfrow is a guy that I was very excited about. He hurt himself in the Jets game. Broke his rib and punctured a lung. But he's supposed to be back this week, so we'll see. You know, if he comes back this week, that'll be a big plus, because you talked about the offense and what's happened. He's a major reason as well. Even though he's not a take-the-top-off-the-defense guy, he's a guy with sure hands. He's a guy that you can expect to extend the drive and, you know, stuff like that. So Derek Carr has been missing him as well.
Well, I mean, hey, you need depth, right? I mean, I think a lot of these good football teams in the league, they're only as good as the quality of depth that they have acquired. And I think the Raiders, that was one of the big things in this draft, was, hey, we need to build quality and we need to build depth. And I think they accomplished that. I mean, I agree with you. I think they've had a hell of a draft this year. So many Charger fans have kind of been jumping on the tank, which I personally don't like.
Right.
And, you know, this game has some draft implications. Yeah. I mean, the Chargers and the Raiders are pretty close in record.
Yep.
And this game, whoever wins or loses, could shift that draft slot a little bit. So from the Raiders fans' perspective, do they want the Raiders to lose this game, or are they looking at trying to get a win?
You know, that's a good question. Last year, I can tell you that they wanted the Raiders to lose as much as possible. And I'm like you. I don't sign up for losing. I don't think NFL players do either. I don't think any NFL player wants to be part of, so, oh, hey, we're just going to lose games. I mean, you saw what happened in Miami. And then, look, Miami started winning some games, you know. Yeah. So I don't think NFL players sign up for that. I get the strategy behind it. I understand what the NBA does. I get all that. But I just, NFL, man, it's one of those things where you don't want to go out there and act like you're going to take a L. You just don't want to do that. So I believe that the Raider fans really do want to see them win. And I'll tell you another reason why I think they have to win. And I'm not saying they're going to win this week, but they have to win because, like you mentioned, they're on a four-game losing streak. Think about this. After week 10, I was saying, hey, look how much improved they are from last year. They won four games last year. Yeah. They're at six games right now. They got six left to go. They've got to end up like at least 8-8, right? Well, now they're 6-8. You know what I mean? And there's two games left.
Yeah.
If they end the season on a six-game losing streak, do you really feel like you improved that much?
Not at all.
You know what I mean? Not really, because that's a six-game losing streak, and that's almost as embarrassing as going 4-12. I mean, it's like, yeah, you did good for half the season or 10 games in the season, and now all of a sudden you stink it up the last six games, including the last game in Oakland. So that, I think the fan base is really, really hungry for a win, and I think the Raiders need to be hungry for a win because they have to have some confidence going into the offseason. They're not going to the playoffs. We get that. The draft spot is not going to be top five, but it shouldn't be. It's not going to be like, you know, 15 to 20 either. I mean, it should be somewhere in that middle range, and we'll see how it shakes out. But yeah, they need a win really bad. I'm sure a couple fans will say, no, just go ahead and lose and get a higher draft pick. Like, draft pick be damned. Go out and win some games and feel confident about yourself going into the offseason.
That's what I'm saying. Momentum, I think, is a real thing.
Yep.
And they need to win football games. The Chargers feel the same way, at least from my perspective. Now, and also, this is a rivalry game, okay?
Right.
These are two of the original franchises in the NFL, okay, from the AFL.
Yep.
All right? So, I mean, there's history between these two teams. I don't think, no matter if there's anything on the line, they're coming to knock someone's head off because that's a rivalry. That's just what you do.
Right, it should be. That should be the mentality, you know. And it's funny, man, when you see NFL games and you see them finish up and you see these guys exchanging jerseys and hugging and talking. And I get it, man. They all know each other. They're all friends with each other. But it's just so funny because the rivalries that we call rivalries aren't really what they used to be. You know,
nah.
Those used to be ugly and nasty, but they were fun. They're not quite like that anymore. But you're right, man. The Chargers, you're playing in the Chargers' home. You're playing in L.A., which is really it's almost like a home game for you anyway. I mean, you're playing there.
Definitely.
Go show out, man. Go show out. Have a good time. And go win a game and do something, you know, make yourself feel good. Because right now, this team can't feel good. Again, on a four-game losing streak, nobody likes that.
All right, so let's finish it up with this. I mean, let's get to this football game because, hey, I mean, that's what they're going to be doing on Sunday.
Right.
What do you think is just going to decide this football game? How are you feeling about it?
I don't feel good about the game. I really don't, you know, and I felt pretty good about the last few games that the Raiders have played, and look, they've lost all four of them, but I felt good because I thought this team was going in the right direction. Jacksonville, I just knew that they were going to win that game, close out the Coliseum the right way, and, you know, just to lose the way that they did, 20 to 16, and not score any points in the second half, I'm like, man, it's got to be better than that. So now I'm at the point where I'm looking at Gruden like, hey, man, what's up with your halftime adjustments? What's going on? You scored 16 points in the first half and nothing? You can't generate a point in the second half? Like, something's going on. And the Raiders have been outscored like 82 points, I think, in the third quarter.
Jeez.
In 2019. They've only scored 20 third quarter points.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's less than three touchdowns. That's not okay.
The whole year.
Yeah, the whole year. That's something that you cannot do. You're not going to win games like that. You're just not. And you allow teams the opportunity to get back into games if you go just like the Raiders did. I mean, the Jaguars of all teams. And you know the Chargers just skunked the Jaguars. The Jaguars scored 17 unanswered points to go and win that game. I mean, there's just no reason for that. So I'm hoping that Josh Jacobs is going to play. You know, he put out a tweet on Monday that he only played because he was trying to win for the city. He's been dealing with that shoulder injury. So I don't know if he's going to play or not. If I'm the Raiders, I kind of want to protect him. But at the same time, me as a fan, I want to see him out there because he's so fun and exciting. And he's the key. He's the key to make everything go. You know, if he's running and he's looking good, that opens up the passing game. That opens up Darren Waller. That opens up, you know, Tyrell Williams if he's catching the ball. I mean, that's, you know, if Hunter Renfro's out there, it'll open him up as well. So, you know, it makes things a little bit easier. It slows down the pass rush a little bit, too, if he's able to get running. So hopefully he's out there, but it's got to start with him. If he can get going and the run game gets going, things open up, and then Derek Carr has a better opportunity, a better chance. But even with that being said, man, just the offense has looked stagnant. It's looked stale. It's looked like it's, you know, not on the same page with each other. So I don't feel great about this game. I'm hoping that Phillip Rivers finds a way to turn the ball over two or three times like he did in Week 10, and he's done it all season long.
Yep.
Really, that's going to be the key. If the Raiders could come up with a couple turnovers, that's how they're going to win the game. It's not just going to be because they go out there and dominate.
Yeah, well, from one team with the Raiders who have not really performed up to expectations to another team in the Chargers, which we're about to get into right after this.
Here we go, back at it, the crossover edition, Chargers-Raiders game come up this Sunday. They played in Week 10, but they're playing again in Week 17. And to help me break down this game, you heard him in the previous segment. Now you're going to hear him again as David Drogemeyer, host of Locked On Chargers, one of the hosts. And just like in Week 10, he's in studio here. And I'm telling you, it's a blessing to have you in studio. I love the energy. I love just being able to interact with you like this. And you know, we ended the last segment talking quarterbacks and talking issues, and I mentioned Phillip Rivers and his turnovers. Yeah. What has been, in your opinion, the biggest reason for Phillip Rivers to put up big yards, get a bunch of touchdowns, but he's thrown a lot of interceptions, he's had fumbles. He's been on the struggle bus, in my opinion, this season. What has been the main reason for that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really loaded question. I mean, obviously, you know, it's multiple things. It's not just him making bad decisions. It's not just the injuries on the offensive line. It's not just the play calling. It's all of those things.
Right.
And, you know, Phillip Rivers, first and foremost, I think just needs to be making better decisions. Some of those interceptions, you're just like, what were you even thinking on that throw? Like, did you not see the safety? I mean, which is so untypical of how Phillip Rivers operates. Normally, he's such a smart quarterback. Normally, he does a great job of protecting the football. But this year, I think the pressure's really got to him. And, you know, when you don't feel comfortable in the pocket, you start to rush and you start to feel things that might not be there. And then you start making bad decisions. And I think all of those things, and I don't know if there's a lack of arm strength. I think he still has it. He's still making great throws to Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. But I just, man, the decision making, I think, this year really has been the main culprit for Phillip. He's capable of doing better, and he's just not getting it done this year.
No, he's really not. And, you know, he had three interceptions he threw in Week 10 against the Raiders. And you mentioned the arm strength. A couple of those passes look like he just short-armed them. Yeah. Is that something that's been going on this season?
Yeah, well, and I mean, a couple of things I've seen also is him, like, pushing off of his offensive linemen to make throws. And, I mean, if anybody's throwing a football, if you're trying to get any air under the ball, you have to set your feet and get your feet into the throw. If you're throwing all arm, you're not going to be able to throw nearly as far or as accurate as if you were to set your feet. I mean, that's just simple fundamentals. And he hasn't had the time to do it. But also, if you don't have the time, then make a better decision and protect the football.
Right.
And that's something he has not done this season.
So let me ask you this question. He's in the final year of his deal. What do the Chargers do? Are they letting him walk? Do you give him a one-year deal? Do you do like Drew Brees got in New Orleans, a little 1 to 2 year deal? What's the plan? Do you groom a guy? Do you draft a guy? Groom a guy? Do you think Tyrod Taylor's the guy? I mean, what's the plan moving forward for the quarterback position with the Chargers?
I mean, that's the ultimate question, right? I mean, I'd love to be a fly on the wall inside that inside that front office, you know, wanted to hear what Tom Telesco and the Spanos family are saying about Phillip. But, I mean, hey, the writing's on the wall. I mean, he's 38 right. years old. He hasn't been very productive this year, which is, again, just not something you're used to with Phillip. I mean, he usually goes out there and plays fairly well on most nights, but you know, this season just is different. So going back to that question, I personally think that the Chargers are going to bring him back for a year.
Okay,
I do think they're going to be looking for a replacement. They have to. I mean, he's 38 years old. So I think what happens is, also, you have to bear in mind, people, the Chargers are going to have a lot of cap space in this offseason. It's projected with the increase of the cap to be about $60 million in cap space. Now, they have a couple guys they need to re-sign. They got to bring back Bosa. I think it's time to re-sign him now before that gets really expensive.
Right.
Hunter Henry, I think they need to bring back. There's a couple other guys they need to get deals done for. But I think it's time to go get the things that Phillip Rivers needs, and ultimately that's time. Whether that's through the draft or established pieces on the offensive line, you got to be able to go get a quarterback that doesn't move around, protection, so he can do what he does best. Now, you can't rely on that, so that's why they brought in Tyrod Taylor, which is a little bit more of the style that Anthony Lynn likes. the style that the league is going towards, which is the mobile quarterback, yep. the guy who can break out of the pocket, extend the plays, maybe run a little bit if he has to. I mean, all the successful quarterbacks right now, the young guys, Lamar Jackson, yep. running quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, running, can run, also has a great arm.
Yep.
Russell Wilson, been in the league for a while, but he can extend the play. Yep. That's where the league is going right now. These super athletic guys that can run and throw, I think that's going to be the mold. And Tyrod Taylor can do that. He's a veteran. He's, you know, he's a winner. He's won football games. So I think it's going to be this. They're going to bring him back for a one-year deal. I think they're going to draft a quarterback early. They need to as a replacement. If Phillip Rivers struggles, I think the person that's going to get the football next is going to be Tyrod. And then after that, if he doesn't go well, then you throw it over to the rookie. But I think the perfect situation is to bring somebody in, let him sit under Phillip, and then take over the reins the next season.
That sounds like the same plan that I have for the Raiders and Derek Carr. I mean, I think they're in a similar situation, except for Phillip Rivers has been in the league a lot longer.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's been in the league since 2004. Derek has been in since 2014. So, you know.
Derek was in high school or middle school.
Exactly. I mean, the Chargers have obviously had a lot more success and a lot more longevity with Rivers. But, okay, if that is the case, if they decide to go do that, is there a guy that you have in mind, or is it a guy that, or is it just like, hey, I trust the front office to go and find a guy?
Well, I mean, we haven't really quite jumped into the draft prep just quite yet, but there's a couple of guys in mind. Obviously, I mean, everybody and their mom would love to get Joe Burrow, but
he's going number one.
Yeah, definitely going number one. And if you look at the Locked On Bengals podcast, you could see that they even changed his name to Joe Burrow with the EUX at the end.
Right, yeah.
So that's pretty much gone. The quarterback from Oregon has kind of been linked to the Chargers a little bit.
Herbert.
Yeah. So some people are like, hey, maybe let's go after him. I mean, we'll see. I mean, there's only a couple of guys at the top of the draft where you're like, hey, if he's there, I got to take him.
Right.
But if he's not, I would still like to see them reinforce the offensive line. And also, they've had some cornerback issues, too. So they might even look to go corner early. I would be a little upset about that because that's not the number one need.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, hey, if your guy's there, I'm all for taking him.
Absolutely. You got to go get the guy that you want to get. That's the beauty of, I mean, the Raiders at least this year have two first-round draft picks, so they can, you know, say, hey, we can get this guy right now, and then we can get this guy later, or vice versa, or whatever.
Or trade capital.
Right, exactly. So that's the beauty of having a couple draft picks in the first round. You feel like you can get multiple assets, but again, you got to hit on those draft picks. And that conversation, believe me, is coming right around the corner as well. Like you said, only got a couple more games left in the season, and then it's going to be all focused on the draft. So that's exciting just to think about, and I'm excited about the whole draft process for not only the Raiders but the rest of the league. Right now, talking to David Drogemeyer, host of Locked On Chargers, and this is the crossover edition. We're talking all things Chargers, all things Raiders, and Melvin Gordon. He's been a guy that I've talked about quite a bit. He's a guy that you mentioned, guys that need to get contracts. He sat out for a while because he wanted a contract, didn't get it. He's played in 10 games, has over 500 rushing yards, and the game against the Raiders, week 10, he went over 100 yards, you know, got a touchdown. That was the first time in 2019 he went over 100 yards. Do you feel like he's got his legs under him now? He's really, you know, because he didn't have training camp. He didn't have all that. So now he's kind of in that good form, and he's really running with a purpose. And looking at his yardage and looking at what he's been able to do over the last few games, and I know he had a fumble the other day, but
two of them.
There you go. Well, you can't do that. Ball security is a must, but do you feel like he's running with a purpose, and it's the Melvin Gordon that you're used to seeing?
Definitely, yeah. And I said that before when we talked in week 10. It was gonna take a couple of weeks for him to get back into the shape, get back into the rhythm, get his legs under him, you know, feel comfortable. Because hey, I mean, training camp, especially for running backs who really need to get those reps,
right?
I mean, a lot of reps to just feel comfortable, get in shape. Just kind of see where your offensive line's going, how they're blocking, kind of mesh with them, that chemistry between yourself and the offensive line. All of that stuff's important, and, you know, Melvin Gordon missed that. I mean, that was his choice.
Right,
I mean,
right.
Obviously, in hindsight, it did not work out well for him.
At all.
He probably lost money he absolutely lost money because he got fined in the interim while being gone. But, yeah, it took him a couple of games where he kind of looked like he was running in mud. But against the Raiders in week 10, you're like, okay, there's the Melvin Gordon that we have been looking for, that physical breakthrough tackles type of runner who's, you know, going to protect the ball, which he hasn't done lately.
Right.
But a guy who's going to get you 4 or 5 yards a clip, and, you know, you feel pretty good about it. A guy who can catch some balls out of the backfield, and he can make some things happen, you know, in the screen game. He's starting to look like himself. he needs to protect the football. He even got benched, you know, after his first fumble against the Vikings. He got benched. They took his helmet away, gave him a ball cap, and let him watch. And then, you know, he fumbled again. And
guess that didn't work.
that didn't work. And then they brought him back into the fourth quarter, and I just don't understand. I mean, after one fumble, it's okay. You might get benched for a half. Two, you can't come back in the game. I'm sorry. I mean, give those opportunities to Justin Jackson and let's see what he can do.
Is Eckler still there or is he injured?
Oh yeah, no, Eckler's been.
I'm surprised he's not running the rock more because he was real successful early on.
Well, the problem with that is Eckler's got almost 1,000 yards receiving.
Oh,
and he's got eight receiving touchdowns. He's got over 10 touchdowns on the year. He's just so nasty as a pass catcher and a running back. As a receiver, his ability to just extend plays and make those big plays besides Mike Williams has just been second to none for the Chargers offense this
year. Well, that's something to definitely watch out for. And so in this game on Sunday, going into it, and the Raiders at one point had a really good run defense, but like I said, Melvin Gordon didn't have any issue running against them in Week 10, and they've really been struggling to stop the run. They did pretty well against Leonard Fournette on Sunday, but still ultimately lost the game. But Leonard Fournette also had about 5 catches out of the backfield and had some nice yardage as well. So do you expect this to be a run-heavy game and then, hey, let's, you know, try to protect the ball and dump it off to like an Eckler?
Yes, definitely. I mean, the Raiders got after the Chargers and got after Phillip Rivers in the last game, sacked him a bunch of times, made him really uncomfortable. That Crosby kid you were talking about was a menace.
Yes.
He absolutely abused him. And, you know, that's something the Chargers need to avoid, obviously, in this contest. They need to, you know, do the screen. They need to run the ball effectively, slow down that pass rush as much as possible, utilize the play action. Phillip Rivers is really good when he does play action, but you have to set that up. That has to be set up properly. And you do that with a run game. You run the ball effectively, then you throw off of it. That's a tried and true method. They need to slow that pass rush down. They got to give Phillip time. So that means running the ball first and then passing off that. Nice, safe throws. Take your shots when they're there, but please, please be more cautious with the football.
It sounds like a Raiders game plan as well. It sounds like the exact same. It's going to be like the Raiders playing the Raiders or the Chargers playing the Chargers. They really are going to go into the game with the same exact game plan. Run the ball. Like you said, take your shots when you have that opportunity. Now, let me flip over to the defensive side of the ball because that's been an area that the Chargers, at least going into the year, you're like, okay, they got a solid defense. They're going to go out there and be some studs. But the games that they really have lost, they've given up 24, 26, you know, 28 points. What, in your opinion, has been the biggest reason or struggle that the defense has had? You mentioned they need a corner or they need some help in the secondary. I know Derwin James was out when they played the Raiders the first time. I believe he's back now.
Yes, he is.
So that's always going to be a help. But just what has been the biggest struggle for the Chargers defensively this year?
So it's a lot of that bend but no break defense. I mean, it's worked a lot, but, I mean, they're breaking a little bit more than they need to. I mean, they don't – you know, they play zone a lot.
Right.
You know, so – sometimes that gets picked on, and you know, they've always had a lot of trouble stopping the run. They're, you know, towards the, you know, the latter third of the league and stopping the run, and that's something that's plagued them all year. Even, you know, the Raiders last time they ran the ball very well against the Chargers, and that's obviously the game plan. Most teams are looking to target probably Michael Davis because nobody's throwing at Casey Hayward. Casey Hayward's been locked down all year long. He's very quietly one of the best corners in the league, but whenever you play opposite him, that guy who's playing opposite him is going to get targeted.
Yeah.
And Michael Davis sometimes has an issue turning his head. And you know, if you watch the Vikings game, they definitely abused Michael Davis a lot. So I would look to see that. But, man.
Let me ask you this question. Who covers the tight end? Because Darren Waller is like, he's like target number one for Derek Carr at this point.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I was watching a lot of the recaps for the games, and Waller is absolutely everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, the guy we mentioned last time who was not playing against the Raiders is Derwin James.
Yeah.
Derwin James is an all-pro.
Okay.
Normally his assignment is to play in the box, cover that tight end. Also, you see Desmond King on him, who was out last game for disciplinary reasons, which was happened twice in a row.
They live in that L.A. lifestyle. They're at the club late night, and they're not getting to practice and getting to their meetings when they're supposed to, and they're getting disciplined. That's never a good thing. You know what I mean? That's always a issue, especially when they're big-time players like that. So that's really interesting. I just got a couple more questions for you, and we mentioned earlier in the show about me being at that last game in Oakland on Sunday against the Jaguars, and I know it's been a few seasons now, but Charger fans know all about it.
Yeah,
they know all about losing their team. Now, they didn't leave California. They didn't go to a whole nother state. They just went up the road and went to L.A. But still, San Diego is where they belong. I mean, everyone knows that they belong in San Diego. You are a San Diego Charger guy. You grew up as a San Diego Charger guy.
That's
what
right.
did it mean to you? What was the feelings like when you realized that's the last game being played in San Diego?
Well, I mean, the thing that's different between this situation and the Chargers situation is you guys know the Raiders are gone after the year.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that was already established. The, right. the stadium was already being built. Like, the writing's already been there. The Chargers situation, nobody knew until the last minute that they were actually going to be going to L.A.
That's a good point.
They just released a memo. The Chargers owner released a memo saying, hey, thanks for 56 years. We're moving to L.A., blah, blah, blah. But to answer your question, it felt like a part of your heart was getting ripped out of your body.
Right.
I mean, like you mentioned, I'm from San Diego. I'm born and raised there. My two co-hosts that I do the show with, John Kegley and Daniel Wade, same thing. When the Chargers left, it felt like the fabric of our city was fractured.
Right, right.
And, you know, they were in San Diego for 56 years, okay?
Wow.
A long, long time. And even 3 years after the fact, you still have commentators calling them the San Diego Chargers.
Yeah, it's one of those things you can't do. You can't almost get it out of your head. It's like, San Diego Chargers, I mean L.A.
Yeah, exactly. But the reason for that is because everybody knows that they've been a complete and utter failure in Los Angeles. They're irrelevant. They're under the college basketball teams.
Right.
Nobody cares about the Chargers in L.A. That hasn't changed. Everyone knows they belong in San Diego. Unfortunately, the politics and the money situation didn't allow it to happen, but it was awful, Q. It was one of the worst feelings. I remember that day I went out to dinner with my wife, and I couldn't help but, you know, break down and cry a little bit, man, because, you know, the Chargers were a big part of my life and a big part of, you know, the city that I loved, and to see them get ripped away from you like that, it was just an awful experience.
No doubt. No doubt about it. And I'm sure there was some tears shed on Sunday at the Raiders game. And, I mean, that's the second time that the team basically divorced the city of Oakland and the Bay Area. And so, you know, a lot of fans were upset and hurt. But, again, they went out there to represent. I went out there to represent as well. And, you know, hopefully the crowd in Vegas is great, and it's not, you know, it's not a mixed crowd. Hopefully they still can find that home field advantage. But, you know, it's a different area, man. It's a different area. There's people going to want to go there just to vacation because it's Vegas. So we'll have to see how it really shakes out. But, man, it is. I think I like how you said it just kind of ripped the heart and the inner lining of the city out, because that's really what happened with the Raiders on Sunday. So that was a really good way to describe that. So my last question for you, what's your gut feeling, man? I mean, the Chargers, they took a bad L to the Vikings, and, well, the Raiders are on a four-game losing streak. I mean, how do you feel this game is going to shake out? It's played in L.A. Just what's your initial thoughts on it?
So my initial thoughts, I mean, I just felt, you know, just immediately after the Vikings beat the brakes off the Chargers, I felt like they were going to be embarrassed, and they were going to be hungry, and, you know, they were going to be motivated to go up against the Raiders, and a rival, and beat them, and beat them hard. I think the Chargers are going to be, you know, very angry, very embarrassed. They're going to play violent, I think, on Sunday, and I think that's going to reflect in the game. So I think the Chargers are going to win this one, and I think it's not going to be close.
You know, it's funny. I usually have a lot of confidence in the Raiders, and I don't this week. I really don't. I mean, I guess that's what happens when you go on a four-game losing streak. You just lose confidence in the team. And right now, to me, they are playing like a team, and I'm sure sometime of the Charger history, you probably had the same feeling. They're playing like a team to me that doesn't trust each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, maybe the defense doesn't trust the offense is going to compliment them, and the offense is thinking, well, the defense ain't going to stop nobody, so they don't trust each other. I don't know. At one point, every guy was there, and you could see he was playing for the brother next to him, the guy next to him. They were all one band of guys. They were all a unit. But now it kind of feels like, and even watching them on Sunday, it just feels like this guy is not in sync with this guy. This guy doesn't know where this guy is. So I really don't feel good about this game. I would say that I favor the Chargers because it's a home game, but we all know it's not
a home game.
Right, it's going to be a Raider home game as well in L.A. And, you know, if they hadn't stunk up the joint against the Jaguars in the second half, I'd feel a lot better, have a lot more confidence. I just really don't. My gut feeling tells me the Chargers are going to win this game as well, but I'm hoping that the Raiders surprise me. You know what I mean? Right now, I would be an idiot to be like, oh, I think they're going to snap their four-game losing streak, and they're just going to put it all together, and they're going to score 30 points. The only thing I'll say, this is the way that the Raiders, in my opinion, win the game, and it's all on the arm of Phillip Rivers or if he turns the ball over. You know what I mean?
It's exactly what I was going to say. I was going to say, at the end of the day, regardless of our gut feelings and how we feel and our bias and all that, if Phillip Rivers cannot protect the football, the Chargers are going to lose.
Right.
They turned the ball over 7 times against the Vikings.
Wow.
Absolutely incredible. That's the most times they turned the ball over since 1998. Okay? That's over 20 years.
Yeah.
That is absolutely unacceptable. It can never happen in the National Football League. The Chargers did it. If they protect the football, they win. I think it really is going to be as simple as that, because if Phillip Rivers protects the ball, that means that he's having a good quality game. I'm not really worried about the running attack. I think that they're going to do just fine. I think they'll find ways to find Eckler. I think they'll find ways to introduce Hunter Henry, but it's all about Phillip Rivers. Protect the ball. They protect the ball, they win. They don't, they lose.
If they didn't, you know, if he didn't throw 3 interceptions last time, they win.
Yeah.
I mean, still, he threw one in the red zone. I mean, right there, about to score. Ugh. Boom, he throws that. I mean, threw multiple ones right at the beginning of the game. Threw one, they got called back. You know, I mean, there's all kind of things that he did wrong. So, yeah, I really think if the Raiders are going to snap their 4-game winning streak, they've got to turn Phillip Rivers over about 3 times.
Yeah, I would agree with you. So. I mean, that's going to be it. That's going to be how this game is going to be decided. Turnovers, and I mean, it might sound simple, but the way these two teams have gone this year,
yeah,
that is as simple as it is. That's the way it's going
to
be.
Yeah, it's got to be. And again, I hate the fact that I can't go in and say, hey, I got a lot of confidence in this team. But after seeing them up close and personal against the Jaguars, who, again, the Chargers, what was the score, 45-10?
45-10,
I mean, that was a beatdown, and the Raiders couldn't score more than 16?
Yeah, I don't know. everything was just rolling for the Chargers that day. I mean, even after they go down early, you're like, well, I'm not really worried because – they put that game away quickly.
Yeah, exactly. So it should be interesting. It should be fun. It's the final, you know, game against the Chargers as the Oakland Raiders. They'll be the Vegas Raiders next year. Obviously, already played their final game in Oakland. But, it's going to be, you know, like you mentioned earlier, man, it's that rival game. So you want to win that one. And this team, I'm telling you, man, the Raiders need a win so bad. They need a win really, really bad. They got to snap this 4-game losing streak, and I know the Chargers want to even the record with the Raiders. They'd move up to the same record with the Raiders if they win the game on Sunday. So it should be interesting, man, and this is always fun to get together and talk some Raiders Chargers with you, and I always appreciate you being here.
Absolutely, man. Thanks again for opening up the studio, and can't wait to watch a really good football game on Sunday.